Good morning. This is Jim Colburn, Commodity Research Group. I'm with Andy LeBeau, also of Commodity Research Group, and we are here to talk about energy markets. Along with Ed Meir, Andy and I founded Commodity Research Group, which consults on various aspects of commodity markets. Check out our website, commodityresearchgroup.com, where we post our monthly commodity reports, our daily metals reports, our blog, and our podcasts. We'd also like to thank our friend, Doug Stetzer of EKT Interactive Oil and Gas Training for hosting this podcast. You can check out his daily newsletter, podcasts, and learning modules at ektinteractive.com. This podcast should be construed as market commentary, merely observing economic, political, and market conditions, and is not intended to refer to any particular trading system. We are not responsible for trading decisions taken by anyone not intended to listen. Information is not guaranteed to be accurate. This is not an offer to buy or sell any derivative. Today is May 1st. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Jim.
I'd like to start out today by talking about an eye-popping number that came out of the weekly petroleum status report, and that was the runs number of 17.285. Put that in perspective for us and talk about its implications.
Well, that is just an amazing number. The 17.3 is not only the highest run level ever for April, it's the highest run level ever. And most of us had not expected that number till June, July, maybe August. To be quite frank, I wasn't looking for that number at all. I thought that 17.1 or 17.2 might be the high. Neither was our government. The EIA had April runs at something like 16.1, 16.2. And what's amazing, Jim, is that just came out like 2 weeks ago. They're giving their predictions for April and May and June crude runs, and they were off by over a million barrels a day in just 2 weeks. So that's a big change in the fundamental picture. And the ramifications are being seen, have been seen almost right away since the release of not only that number, but the prior number also was close to 17 million barrels a day. And, you know, we've seen it mostly in the gasoline, and naturally it's had a very negative impact on crude as well.
Andy, I noticed in earlier in the year there was a number of 17.1. I think it was the first week in January.
Right.
And back then it was just an unbelievable number, and subsequent weeks the number came down. But do you think this number is going to stay up at this level, or is it possible?
I don't. I'm not sure it's possible to stay at 17.3. We're looking in our latest monthly report. We were looking for something for May around 17, and then maybe June or July, you know, plus or minus 17. You know, the key will be what happens to refining margins as a result of the high crude run number. What's really panicking the market and giving a tremendous anxiety is that gasoline yields have not yet gotten to summer levels. We're still at like 56, 57% gasoline yield, and that's going to go up to 61, 62. So basically, what's going to happen if we stay at these numbers for April and into May is we're going to just make way too much gasoline. And that's really what the market's freaking out about. And you can see in the cracks, the July gas crack has gone basically straight down from $20 to $15 in the last week or two. Now, having said all that, and again, the other reason why the market's freaking out is we're not quite at the point where we'll talk about economic run cuts. We're not even close. I mean, margins, they're not not great, but they're still runnable. So this is a big change for the products, and it really sets up a market conundrum, because the high crude runs, obviously demand for crude is good. Demand for crude is great. You know, 17.3, it's a million barrels a day more than, you know, the government had just put out and many analysts had thought. So you've got this great demand for crude, which is going to be bullish for crude. But, you know, we really might mess up the gasoline balances and the diesel balances. So, Jim, I think eye popping is exactly the word.
Yeah.
Who's on that number?
Well, that leads us into, you know, it looks like we have this huge overflow of crude oil stocks, and we're going to run them through refineries and hope that maybe gas demand bails us out. So let's talk about, you know, I see the 4-week number also from this weekly petroleum status report shows gas demand at 9.237, down 1.8% from last year's numbers. And, you know, why don't you take us through that a little bit?
Well, I think the gasoline demand this year has really been volatile from month to month. January and February were not good. We're going to get the February numbers soon, you know, the revised February numbers. Maybe they're already out. I haven't seen them. But March demand was excellent. And now April demand is soft. So we really need to absorb the potential excess gasoline. We're going to need huge numbers in May. I mean, we're going to need May gasoline demand to be up like 300, 400, maybe even 500 a day from April numbers. And you know, maybe it's possible given the volatility of the weeklies and the month to months. But you know, I don't see it in the. I don't quite see that in the macro. And Jim, you posted a really interesting chart on miles driven, which was bullish, but I think there are other things going on in for gasoline demand.
Yeah, we talked about the basically two different narratives. One is that we're not driving anymore. That would be the lifestyle changes idea, that we're all staying home, watching Netflix, eating Domino's pizza, and not going to malls. And yet, when you look at the miles driven, we're at, I think these were DOT February numbers, they're at record levels. So both narratives in a way are correct. You know, if you look at our miles driven per capita, it's nowhere near the record. But if you look at miles driven totally, we are, you know, doing pretty well. So it's the economy is seems to be flattening out a little bit, but there were more people at work than there were last year at this time. So you would expect to see, you know, maybe a flat, or I think the EIA is looking for flat gasoline demand 2017 over 2016. Is that correct?
Yeah. Maybe 50 to 100 plus or minus.
And but when we look at the overall demand in the world, the big three are looking for what, 1.3 million to 1.5 million 2017 over 16 increase. And that's with a roughly a flat gasoline demand. So we don't really need, you know, gasoline demand to be, you know, sharply above last year, but gee, we need it. Flat would be pretty good.
Flat would be good. Growth is going to be good. I mean, the U.S. is going to need a pop here this summer, or export demand is gonna have to continue to grow. That's been a little bit disappointing so far this year. So we're gonna need another, you know, another 100 to 200 a day increase in export demand coming up, or, you know, we're gonna have to get into some type of economic run cuts when and if margins soften. And looking at these cracks in the 3-2-1s, you know, they're softening, but you know, refiners are gonna run through May, and it could get, you know, again, it could be problematic. Now, one good thing is diesel's in a little bit better shape. I think the balances look better. Diesel demand globally has been pretty good. Export demand has been outstanding. So U.S. export demand has been outstanding. We actually sent some You know, we've been sending barrels to Latin America, and demand there has been good. Ag demand in May should be pretty good as the plantings increase. So at least diesel doesn't look quite as problematic as gasoline, but they're both, you know, they're both something to watch. And that's the thing that I think maybe the market is clearly about to focus on the OPEC meeting, but you know, the market has this real laser focus on U.S. production numbers, which is important going down the road. But right now, we really need to focus on what's going on on the product balances, because you know, demand for crude is going to be good. It doesn't really matter what April or May U.S. crude production is going to be, because demand has been so good, runs have been so good. So you know, I think it's important that traders, analysts, focus on what's going on in the products. And maybe that's going on. I mean, maybe that's going on given what's happening with the cracks right now.
Well, that's a good point of maybe underline. We if you look at some of the financial news and they report on the weekly petroleum report, they'll tell you what the crude stocks have done. But what you're saying is maybe if we dig a little deeper into that report and start focusing in on gasoline demand coming up as we go into the season, you think that's like, you know, if I put you on a desert island and gave you one indicator, is that the thing you'd want to see right now?
Probably, yeah. where gasoline demand would be.
Right.
I probably want to see a few other things.
Right, of course, yes.
If I was on an island by myself.
That's true, yes, of course. Let's move. Another eye-popping number in the report was crude exports, 1.152 million. What's that number all about? Where's it going? What's going on there?
That is, that was an eye-popping number. Again, it's just a 1 week number. The 4 week numbers have been pretty good because of that. But U.S. crudes are going to Asia. They're going to Latin America, and they're going to Europe. And you know, Europe really doesn't need it. To be quite frank, I mean, I think that the marginal export barrel from the U.S. into Northwest Europe served. It was one of the bearish factors on the Brent structure, because Brent structure really weakened last month. We saw that go. We saw structure go from flat to a slight contango to a big contango. And we also saw 40s crude, which is a physical barrel, go from like plus 30 to minus 60 in a week or two. So you know, that was just one of the U.S. barrel was just one of the factors that undermined Brent. The arb to Asia closed for a little bit, so that softened. But there could be some good things happening on the Brent market, and that could clear up, you know, that could clear up really quickly.
Which leads us to another important talked about issue, is U.S. oil production. And I guess my basic question here is our EIA still chasing this number? Are they kind of behind the curve with their estimates? In their last report, they showed Q4 2018 U.S. oil production at 10.12, which is another big...
Right, that's another big number.
Yeah, I mean, for a quarter, that could be a record. In 1970, in October, November... we produced slightly over 10 million, but not for the quarter. So that's a huge number, but they still may be, it looks like they're maybe underestimating that. What do you think?
I think it's certainly possible. There was one of the think tanks put out a number that they thought U.S. production was going to grow 100,000 a month this year. So if that's the case, you know, from here on out, so there are 8 months left. So yeah, the 800 will get us over 10 million by the end of the year.
That's a lot.
I think that may be a little optimistic. The other proviso there was that prices had to remain between 50 and 55.
Yes.
Yeah, I sort of think they will, and we'll talk about that later. But, you know, I think 100 may be too optimistic. I think the U.S. is looking for 30 a day growth, 30,000 a month growth. I think that's too low. So it's probably somewhere in the middle. Like 60 or 70 a day, maybe a month. I'm sorry, 60, 70,000 a day every month. So, you know, I think that's probably the number, and that'll get us to like 9.7, 9.8 by the end of the year.
Yeah, it's. I mean, we certainly don't want to look out too far, but you know, you start to see in the press these producers. The IEA and other, the president of Aramco, other producers talking about how we're not spending enough money to offset the expected increase in demand and the expected decline in some of the oil wells. So you know, down the road, it's good. The question is, can the fracking offset some of that? But that's way down the road.
We'll be talking about that, I'm sure.
Yeah, like
podcasts.
Yeah, like peak demand or peak supply. Anyway, just quickly, to manage money, we looks like we saw a sharp drop in net length. Is that right?
Yeah. And I think part of the last few weeks' trade has been, getting in and getting – it looks like specs in, specs out, because you had the net length from March 28th to April 11th in just 2 weeks – increased in WTI by like 65,000 and 65,000 more or less in Brent. And then last week, and then in the next 2 weeks, they're down 75,000, you know, each one of them. So it's kind of like, all right, you get in and then you get out. And I think that's a lot of the trade that we've seen, buying on the expected, on the expected rebalance and, the upcoming OPEC meeting. And, it's clear the market's is getting tired of the rebalance talk. In first quarter, we probably, according to the IEA, we didn't draw stocks. We may have been flat or even global stocks building 100 to 200,000. And in second quarter, we're probably net. I'm not sure we're gonna draw that much until we head into June or July.
Right. We keep pushing it.
We keep pushing that. We keep kicking that thing back.
Yep. I wanted to make a couple comments in the world of options. We saw Pemex come out and hedge reportedly 409,000 barrels a day from May to December. That's a big number. They're producing, 2.1 million, 2.2, something like that?
Right.
And the interesting thing, it came out of – it did not come out of Mexico's, finance group. It came out of Pemex, the oil company. We haven't seen that before. Want to say anything other than that's a big number, and that gets the way that gets into the sort of the oil market is through the market maker process. So the people on the other side sell the puts, and they'll turn around and sell futures against that. So some of that bearish, it's a bearish trade. If I buy puts, that does get into the market through that process. Interestingly, implied volatility for June, that's the front month, is around 24.5, and July is 28. It usually doesn't do that. Usually the front month is the highest implied vol. But we do have an OPEC meeting in between these options expirations. So June goes off on May 17th. Then you have the OPEC meeting on May 25th. And June goes off May 17th, and then July goes off of the 15th of June. So July's alive for the OPEC meeting. June is gone, and you see that spread, the front month vol collapse versus the second month. July is 28%. And going into the last OPEC meeting that we had in late November, volatility was around 50%. So you can see a lot more nervousness over that one than this one. And we'll talk about that OPEC meeting in just a second. But having said that, June is sort of dead as an option, we've seen a huge buildup in June 55 calls to the tune of 87,000, almost 88,000 contracts of open interest. It settled at 7 cents on Friday. So there are people, obviously there's buyers and sellers. I'm guessing that a lot of that open interest was initiated by the buyer. So there's some people that think we're going to see some pretty good price action to the upside, even before OPEC meets. The other open interest in the 60 calls in June have 59,000. That's a big number too. That option's been around a long time, so a lot of those positions were put on a long time ago. And then the D60 also is a big 49,875. You know, despite this, the recent weakness, I think there's still people out there that are looking at this market being closer to $60 by the end of the as we go towards the end of the year. Okay, so let's talk about the OPEC meeting, May 25th. What are your thoughts on that, Andy?
Well, I think that we, as I wrote in our monthly report, I think the market is probably putting something like 85% chance that there's going to be a rollover, which means there's still a 20% chance that there isn't going to be a rollover. But I happen to go with the market. I think there's an 80% chance of a rollover. I don't really see, that clearly it's going to be a lot of downside if there is no rollover, because the market doesn't have room for an extra 1.5 million barrels a day right now. Obviously the Russians have more or less complied. OPEC has complied very nicely. I mean, they're probably above 100% compliance. And even with some added Libyan production and maybe a couple more cargoes coming out of Nigeria, you know, they're going to be right around a million two cutting back. So that's, you know, that's clearly to their credit. And most of us didn't think they'd be able to do it, but they have. So, you know, in my opinion, they're very close to the beginning of a fairly significant rebalance, and they've gone this far. So I really don't see why, they should just play it out. It's only been 4 months so far. And the second half of the year, the market does look, if you take the call on OPEC crude from the big three, you're looking at a million barrels a day of deficits if they're producing around 32. So, you know, we are going to start drawing stocks, and we should be on paper drawing a million barrels a day. So, I think they should, they've got to allow this. They've got to allow this deal to work, and it's about to start working. You know, they're only a few months away. So, I think they're going to roll it over.
It's interesting to me. This Saudi Aramco IPO is interesting to me because, you know, if you are producing oil as Saudi Arabia, you might have one pricing idea. You have this cartel to put together. If you're producing as a shareholder owned company, I would think that you would be developing more aggressively fields and be more aggressive on producing. But the IPO it's going to be a small percent of public shareholders. It'll still be assumed it'll be run pretty much the same way as it's been run in the past. So, you know, I, it's a wait and see. I mean, we really don't know if this thing's going to be successful. What you're telling me is you think it will be, and that would lead you to what price projection, say, going out a month, 2 months?
Well, I think there's still a chance that clearly the market has to stabilize. It's today's May 1st. It's down again today, but the market needs to find some stability. I think that, you know, it's interesting you point about that, the 55 number is such a big number.
It is a big number, right?
You know, because that's really it's a technical number as well, and I could see TI working its way, given the demand for TI, at least through demand for U.S. crudes anyway, through these higher crude runs, you know, trying to work its way back into the low to, you know, into the low 50s, you know, 53 area, something like that, you know, maybe 55 on a reach. Again, I think, as we pointed out in the beginning comments, demand is going to have to be, particularly U.S. gasoline demand is going to have to be pretty good. But, you know, the market, I think it can move back over the next couple of months, you know, maybe into the low 50s, maybe into 50, maybe, you know, on a real reach into 55.
Right. And, you know, that also, you'd expect the structure to firm up a little bit too, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. And it has. It went into a, you know, it started going into a contango as like the Dece Red Dece, which is very carefully watched, what was softening. And now it's beginning to inch up. You know, it's beginning to come back as is the first 2 months. You know, the big thing to watch is the Brent structure. I think for traders to watch the what's going on for you know, the first month versus the second month. You know, see that, to see if that's beginning to come in, because it may indicate that the Brent market's beginning to you know, show some signs of strength. We have. We've got field maintenances coming up in June. So, you know, I'd be watching the Brent structure carefully and the TI structure, obviously, you know, secondarily. Actually, the first thing I'd be watching is cracks. I mean, that's going to be a key thing.
Right. Very good. I one of the trades that, people like to do with that view that maybe we chop around sideways to higher is selling a put. And then if you have the structure working in your favor, where you're moving from, say, a contango to a backwardated market, that will also help you as time goes. You know, you get time decay, you're also moving up on the roll, the curve is, as well as time goes by. And of course, the big downside is if, you know, the balance doesn't come and the market's down, blowing through your strike price. It's unlimited risk on the downside. But those are trades that people like to do to take advantage of that view I just mentioned.
Right. You probably want that 80% OPEC rollover to get to like 100% OPEC rollover.
Right. Yes. Right. Now,
if they fail, you know, the market obviously is
yes. You know, and it, as you know, one person during Gulf War I said, when vols were up around 120%, they said, "Why don't we sell vol here?" And the problem was because you got a, what was it, I can't remember, was it an $18 gap from right. The next price gap down? And that's the problem coming out of an OPEC meeting. You know, if you're short options, the market could gap through your strike, and that's one of the risks. But as I mentioned, the July vol is 28%. The market doesn't seem to be. It seems to be, as you said, 80% is pricing a rollover to this meeting. So, okay. Anything else you want to talk about here, Andy? Going forward, you said the gas demand cracks we want to keep an eye on. I think we kind of covered everything.
Yeah, I think we did. I mean, there's the big macro trades, but I guess oil has been part of the, you know, rush in, rush out and some of these Trump reflation trades, you know, seem to be going by the boards. But you know, I think for oil, a lot of you know the, what's key is its own internal fundamentals. And again, we have a big event coming up later in the month.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that I hear is that people talking about how even in some of these markets that are trading range markets, there's violence within the range. So you mentioned the speculative money moving in and out. I mean, when we at the end of the year, we might look back and say, "Oh, that was a pretty well defined range." Yet, when you're living through it, it just doesn't feel that way. You know, it feels like this market sits. It's like an "Oh my God" kind of market,
right?
So, okay, thanks, Andy.
All right.
Jim Colburn, Andy LeBeau, Commodity Research Group. Check out our website, commoditysearchgroup.com. Talk to you next month.